You're listening
to the When Life Hands You Lennons podcast.
But in an entry-level film production, it's one strike and you're out. You're fired. I'm not calling you back.
If your goal today is to make a basket, we're going to make that basket.
The minute you create something, as soon as it's made tangible, you have a copyright in it.
How do I get our guys to sound that big, you know, that full when they do the harmonies?
And I'm your host, Lennon Seahawk. Let's get to the show. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of When Life Hands You Lennons. This week's episode features Thomas Eggensberger. He is a German-born composer for visual media who was brought up in Munich, Germany. He currently lives in Los Angeles as a freelance composer, and he works as a composer assistant for a film composer in Los Angeles and also as an orchestrator. And he also started his own sample business called Green Light District with two of his colleagues, Dylan Love and Marlon Lang. They've had their sounds placed and used in AAA video games titles, Netflix movies, and HBO films, which is incredible. Now, typically, how these guests are chosen is they fill out a Google form with a bunch of information about who they are, the projects they've worked on, the history, their college experience, schooling, etc., etc. And I get a little bit of information about who they are and just enough where I'm like, okay, this is enough to get a conversation going. And I just jump into the conversation a couple minutes before we start and we just hit record and we talk. I don't like to do a lot of research because then it doesn't help. I feel like I've got to like check the bullet points and make sure everything gets discussed. So I typically try to keep the conversation very open and free-flowing and organic, and that's exactly what this conversation was. We talked about all things film composition. We talked about how Hans Zimmer, when he composed the Joker's theme, for The Dark Knight, how he used a razor blade on a guitar. We talked about the amazingly talented Johan Johansson, may he rest in peace, and the uniqueness that brought about the Sicario film and how it's such a situational and unique soundtrack and how it just fits for that movie. We talk about all kinds of film composers, Hans Zimmer, Bear McCreary, Johan Johansson. There's a whole bunch of others as well. Hildur, I can't even pronounce her last name. She's an Icelandic composer who recently composed the Joker movie, and just a whole bunch of other stuff. We talk about how music brings people together and is enlightening and brings about community and just brings unity amongst everybody. And lastly, we talk about how music does amazing things with our minds, like allowing us to remember and bring us back to specific moments in time and how those carry out throughout the rest of our lives. When you hear a certain song and you can be taken back instantly to a moment in time, 15, 20, 30, 50, 70 years ago, regardless of how fresh and good your memory is. And it's an amazing thing that music can do for us. We talk about all kinds of things. So before I let you go and we dive into the conversation with Thomas, I want to remind you to please sign up to my mailing list. You can sign up via the link below or via the link on my website. There is numerous places to sign up on my website. It helps me notify you when new episodes are live and keeps you updated on my life. I would also appreciate it if you would leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps me garner new amazing fans and listeners and helps boost the episode, the podcast in the algorithms. I would also appreciate and greatly, greatly, greatly thank you if you would follow me on Instagram and you can keep up with me there. That link is below as well. Lastly, I would also appreciate it if you or somebody you know would be a good guest for the show. Please fill out that Google form and the guest request form, and I will reach out. So without further ado, let's dive in to my amazing conversation with the incredibly talented Thomas Eggensberger. So Thomas, how do you pronounce your last name?
Oh, that's a good one. Eggensberger.
Is it German?
It's a German name, yeah.
German name. Okay, I got a little German in me too. I figured it was awesome. German. Cool. So thanks for being on the show. I'm excited to chat with you. You have quite the resume, and you've worked with some pretty incredible people. So Tell us a little bit about yourself so we can get kind of a base grounding of who you are, and then we can kind of jump right into hopefully an exciting conversation.
Sounds great. Well, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Well, a little bit about me. I'm from Germany. I was born and raised there. I was actually born about an hour to 2 hours away from Munich, in a town called Prien am Chiemsee, however we pronounce it. And that's where I grew up, very close to the German Alps. So, you know, skiing was a big part of my childhood. Just doing loads of that stuff and like getting into music very early on, actually, because my parents kind of introduced me to music very early on, like listen to vinyls and listening to, you know, CDs and cassettes at the time still. I miss cassettes, I do have to say. But yeah, you know,
the classic physical copies of music. It's just
exactly, because and then you still felt like you owned something. It was like,
yes,
here it is.
Yes,
you have to actually get it to have
yes,
it, which was yes, awesome. I love that part about it. So listened to a lot of different music, mainly classical though. That's really how it kind of all started, to be honest. It was very much like Chopin and Debussy and Ravel and Strauss and Wagner, like all the kind of the classical greats, so to speak, and listened to a lot of them. And like that very much inspired me early on, to be honest, to do something in music at the time. I didn't know where I was going to head later in my life, but you know, that was kind of that.
Okay. And so you got the musical inspiration from your folks and your family.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about that. Are they musical people? And where did you go to school? Like, tell us about what you're doing now.
Yeah. Well, my mom used to play cello for a very long time. Like, when she
loved the cello.
Yes. Beautiful instrument. One of my favorites.
Yes. Yeah.
She played it, and she also played a recorder when she was younger. So she kind of like played a bunch of different instruments, was actually really good at it. I think due to her job, she's a teacher, Latin and French, she kind of stopped playing the instrument and stopped practicing. So I didn't really like get to see her play that often or at all. And my dad just played acoustic guitar, kind of like as a hobby, more or less. He just kind of inherited a cool guitar from his dad. And that's kind of really also how I learned how to play guitar. He just gave me a guitar and he was like, here's an acoustic guitar, learn, you know, try something. And the funny thing is I'm left-handed, so he had a right-handed guitar, so I had to like actually learn left-handed guitar on a right-hand guitar, which was kind of interesting. But went to school in a town called Garmisch, which was a kind of a mountain town. That's where I went to the elementary school. Stayed there for, I don't even know, like a couple of years, however long you stay in elementary school for, basically. We did move quite a lot, so it was kind of, sometimes I was there, sometimes I was there. So it was like different locations early on. We moved a lot. So it's hard to say how many years I stayed in which place and stuff. So basically grew up there in the mountain region for most of my life. And then in 2007, 2009, I had the opportunity to actually be an exchange student and go to the States as an exchange student, stayed a year in Michigan, to go to high school.
So you experienced the cold just like I did.
Yep.
You got to suffer.
Exactly. Got to suffer daily. And it was awesome. I love it.
It really builds character.
It really does. And I just miss it sometimes. I gotta say, I do love the weather here because obviously I'm now located in LA and I've been here since June 2020. So it's been, really the time that I moved to LA was the worst time I could have possibly ever moved to the States or to
LA. You haven't even been here a year then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. I haven't been for long, but I studied in Chicago, actually. I went to my postgrad degree in film composition at Columbia College.
Was that a master's or a doctorate?
That was a master's, yeah.
Okay.
It was a master's that I finished last May, basically. And then
congrats.
Before that, the whole pandemic hit. And I was like, I've always wanted to end up in LA. I'm going to still go to LA despite the pandemic. And then drove down here, basically. And that's, it's like a really concise little story, but you know.
Sure.
That's kind of how things happened.
So you went for film composition, and what What compelled you to do that? What interested you in film? Like, why film?
I mean, really early, I think it probably goes back to my childhood as well. When for one of my birthdays, I can't remember what age that was exactly, but I remember my parents gave me the trilogy of The Lord of the Rings. So The Lord of the Rings was the first movie I ever watched, really, like a proper epic movie that I can remember watching. So that was my first movie experience, and I loved it so much. I thought it was like incredible how the story was told with so many different mechanisms, with like sound design and the story itself, the actors, the costume design, the locations, and especially the music. I was like, this is so incredible, remembering all this incredible music by Howard Shore, who's one of my idols. He's an awesome composer, still doing amazing work, and love his stuff. So that was an early influence where I thought, wow, this would be really cool to be able to do that for a career, or just be involved in any part of the storytelling process, really. Because I think just telling a story is the important and the interesting part I love about film. And now I've kind of come to the conclusion that I love the music aspect of it, because it can really enhance a story and can really kind of bring things to life. Even if the acting and everything is amazing and every other part of it is great, I think it could still take it to that next level. So that was definitely my early experience and exposure to film. And then I studied sound engineering in Munich for a while, because I thought, well, I'm going to just experiment with different kind of genres or different parts of the industry. So I started with kind of sound engineering there. So I went to a music academy called the Deutsche Pop, which is a really cool, very creative music academy located in Munich, that I studied at for 2 to 3 years, I think it was, overall. I'm trying to remember how long those courses were, but it was really awesome because I was exposed to recording in recording studios and being able to like work with different artists and recording my own music as well. And I thought, wow, love that. Such a cool aspect. But also, I didn't really want to just record other people. Yeah. It was great. It was so much fun because it's such a mixing and recording and all that stuff is also such a big part of composition in my part.
It's an art form in and of itself.
It is.
Yeah.
It really can bring a really incredible composition to like the most incredible piece of art ever made, because it just is that other 50%. I think it's almost 50-50. It's really composition, and then 50% is mixing and mastering at the end. Mm-hmm. That really gives that like polish, that absolute crispness to the music, and like it really brings across what you want to bring across in the music. But yeah, so basically did that for a while in Munich, loved it, realized actually I want to be the person who writes the music. Basically, I'd like to be the person being recorded or whose music is recorded. So I then looked up a bunch of undergraduate places around the world, basically, and ended up going to Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama in Cardiff in Wales in the UK, which I studied at for 4 years. It was like a classical composition degree with orchestration classes and really detailed arrangement classes and working with musicians every day. It was really an extremely creative space, really safe space too, to kind of make mistakes and learn. It was really cool. And great orchestral hall and everything. It was really a phenomenal place, living with other composers, which was also very inspiring, seeing other people work hard every day and like just turning out one amazing piece after the other, and then thinking, wow, I got to do something. It's like on a Saturday or Sunday, you don't think, oh, I should take a break. No. You have to do it at least as much as the others to deserve a break. That's kind of how I thought it at the time. And and then during that time, during studying there, that's when really I had an incredible opportunity, which was to work with the composer Johan Johansson.
One of my favorites.
Yep.
May rest in peace.
Yep, exactly. And I had the opportunity to work with him because during the process, during going to college, I realized I love working with musicians. I love having real people on board, and writing music is definitely the thing I want to do. And I decided, well, I do want to do film music. I don't want to stay a classical composer and write concert pieces. That's fun too. That's super awesome. And it's great to have people in a room and experience the music in a room, which is completely different than a movie theater experience, in my opinion. But I said, I want to be a film composer. So I literally emailed my favorite film composer of all time, which is Johan Johansson. And I got a reply within, I would say, probably 10 minutes. It was so quick. Wow. It was unbelievable.
Was it from him or somebody from his team?
It was somebody from his team.
Okay.
Who kind of said, basically, thanks for your interest. How long do you want to stay? And can you do longer, basically?
Oh, wow. Really,
totally unexpected. I was like, this is like my idol.
He's wait, incredible. I didn't prepare for this moment.
Exactly.
Now, I didn't expect a reply, so now I actually have to prepare for this. Exactly. I've had those moments.
Where you think, yeah, well, you know, might as well try. You never know. The worst that can happen is you get a no or you don't get a reply. That's
keep moving on. Yep. That's what this industry is all about. You just move on.
Exactly. Exactly. So I did that, got the reply. I was like, oh my God, crap. This is actually going to work out, I think. Mm-hmm. And basically flew back for the Christmas holiday, I think it was, to my parents' house in Germany, because I was in the UK at the time. So I flew back for Christmas. And then during that time, they basically wanted to just interview me just to ask what, you know, what I've done and what my compositional style is, why I want to come, and kind of the general questions you get asked when you apply to somewhere. And we spoke a couple times, and then basically after a few sessions via Skype, we came up with dates, and I literally went to fly to Berlin to go to a studio and work on his team for 3 months, which was really an incredible experience. I was very lucky also because I didn't know where to stay at the time in Berlin. So I luckily have family in Berlin. So they let me stay with them really kindly, which is super awesome. Wow. One of my favorite cities, by the way. It's incredible. But
I've never been out of the US, but Germany is on my list because I've got a lot of German blood in me. So
nice.
And I love German food. So
which is your favorite?
I like bratwurst.
Bratwurst, yeah, that's the classic.
That's probably my top favorite. My family used to cook, I think, like different versions of like watered down. There's a lot of Norwegian in us too, so we have like lefse all the time, and there's a few other dishes that I guess are probably parts of the German culture, but I'd never known that they were.
Yeah.
There's
a big variety of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff.
A lot of meat.
A lot of meat. I went to a German restaurant when I lived in Florida for a friend's birthday. It was like a German restaurant. We had bratwurst and what's the drink that you get in a big boot and you have to stand and drink until it's all
big steins.
Yeah. It was like a big boot and everybody took a drink of it until it was gone and you couldn't sit down until it was gone. And you just kept passing it. It was like this, and people were dressed up in like German clothes and they had German music. It was fun. It was
awesome.
And it smelled like German food in there for sure.
It was great.
Food was great.
It's perfect for the winter time. That's definitely what German food aims for, I think. It's definitely like gets you through the winter. Loads of meat, loads of cabbage, loads of warm, stewy stuff. Pretty good.
I would say, what is my sauerkraut? Is that a German thing?
It is, yeah.
I was thinking that was Norwegian, but I'm like, that's a German thing. I can't eat sauerkraut. My grandma, my family loves it. I can't eat it. I just can't fathom. I just can't get to it. Nope.
Yeah, I feel like there's so many variations of making it. It's you have to really get it right for it to taste good.
The one my grandma makes, I think, is just really pungent.
Oh.
And it's just like, it's like raw sauerkraut. And I'm like, oh man, this smells like a dead animal.
Yeah.
And
it tastes like one too.
I'm like, no, if it smells like that, I can imagine what it tastes like. So I tried to stay away from the sauerkraut.
That's awesome. But yeah. So basically stayed in Berlin for a couple months to work there. I was at the time the intern, starting out there and kind of really soaking in that daily studio life. That was an incredible team of composers who were kind of in an amazing, really old, cool, vibey building in a Berlin area called Kreuzberg, which is kind of a really cool up-and-coming, awesome, hip area, really awesome. Great restaurants around. I mean, really very creative space. There's loads of art galleries and studios and painters. It's really phenomenal. Love it. And I mean, one of the people who was on the team there as well was Hildur Gudnadottir, who's, you know, recently blew up with her film scores, which is really absolutely incredible. And
she just which one did she just compose now?
Like Joker.
Joker. Yes. Yes. That's where I heard her from.
Yeah.
Joker.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like
incredible.
Very good. Yeah. And it was like one of those moments where you just I remember going into the studio for the first time because Johan's representative basically at the time let me in and everything and just kind of introduced me to the whole studio, to the whole team, because it was like 6, 7, 8 people on that floor. They had a whole floor to themselves in that building. And it was really funny because the first time I actually met Johan in person was when he scared the hell out of me. It was really so funny because he was behind a door that was open and I walked in and she's like, oh, I wonder where Johan is, basically. And then he just appeared behind the door and was like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. And I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like,
yeah.
Going from emailing one of your idols, I mean, you wrote my favorite soundtracks, to being in that studio, being scared by your idol is kind of next level too. I love it. It was really an amazing experience. And then from there, it was smooth sailing because everybody was so welcoming and so creative. It was just really that extra polish that I needed of people saying, this is how we do things. This is how we do things in the film industry. This is how we make soundtracks. And it was just the most creative environment I could have possibly wished for. It was full of cool people from Iceland.
Oh, so he's Icelandic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Icelandic. So it's Hildur and like so many other people on the team also were from Iceland. And I just love that general musical vibe that the Icelandic composers have. Like people
Björk is from Iceland too, isn't she?
Yeah.
A lot of talent coming out of there.
It's really incredible. And it's actually such a small country too.
Yeah.
And so there's this, I feel like half of the country are musicians and creatives. It's really incredible because everything, it seems like everybody who comes from Iceland is just the coolest person and writes the coolest music.
It's the same thing with like electronic music. Like everybody, all the like big DJs and producers are from like Sweden.
Yeah.
Or Denmark or Norway. There's like so much talent that comes out of there. And there's a few from Germany too.
Yeah. But
there's just so many from like Sweden, Norway, Denmark, those three neighboring countries up there. And exactly. I'm just like,
it's really incredible. Scandinavia, they know what they're doing. They really do.
They just got incredible. It in their blood. I don't know what they're eating over there, but send it over here. I can take some.
Well, I guarantee you it's not sauerkraut.
That's not the sauerkraut. No, it's not the sauerkraut. I'll pass on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
So what were the types of things that you were doing with Johan and his team? Did you get to like work the boards? Was he helping you? Were you able to like work on some of the scores with him? Like what was it that you were doing with him?
Well, it started off, I think that's, they probably tested me with, you know, is this guy actually good? Does he know what he's talking about?
Sure.
He's a young guy. We don't know. Fair enough. So I started basically, you know, doing maintenance jobs in the studio, kind of, you know, coiling cables, the classics, really the classics, coiling cables, occasionally bringing coffee, not to him though, to a few other people on the team, like doing really stereotypical studio work, archiving things, sorting hard drives, which I kind of loved as well because I got to see all old projects that he's worked on and like old variations of stems, old mixes, old ideas.
A gold mine for a composer.
Yeah, totally. I was like digging through that. And like, I know it doesn't sound thrilling on organizing hard drives and like renaming stuff, but I loved it. I loved every second of it. It was like, here's a person I've admired for so long. And now I get to soak in basically their musical identity.
Just being around their energy is enough to like inspire you.
100%. And there was an energy at all times. It was really on a tough day. there was energy there, but it's all positive vibes. That's once something I gotta say. It was just That's all amazing. Positive. That's and so it started with that, and then basically as the months progressed, they let me do more and more things. So I kind of started working more on sessions. So bouncing stems, for example, and like bouncing the stereo mixes, sending them off to music editors for approval for a film. It was a film called Mary Magdalene and Mandy that I got to work on, which Mary Magdalene, Hilder, and Johan scored together. Mm. So there's they worked together all the time on pretty much every soundtrack they've ever worked on. They worked together on. So they were constant collaborators. So for Mary Magdalene, like after a few months, I got to do more and more musical stuff, musical work, and got to work with a guy called Viktor Orianason, who is an Icelandic violinist and viola player and orchestrator, conductor, who was acting as the orchestrator on Mary Magdalene. And because of my degree previously, or whilst I was there, basically, I had a lot of experience with working with Sibelius, the notation software, mm-hmm. and actually making scores and parts for musicians all the time, because that's kind of what I did pretty much every day for like 2 or 3 years prior, because it was just working with musicians on a daily basis, basically. So it was like kind of really natural. I was like, I can do this. I can mm-hmm. orchestrate. How can I help? And then they basically let me onto the orchestration team. And I actually helped prepare the orchestrations to send off to London to record at Air Studios in London. So that was a really creative part of that work in Berlin, because I got to, you know, look at his sessions and like realize his vision basically with orchestration, which is also another aspect of it, which I think is so important to music, is a composition, orchestration within the composition, mixing, mastering. It's like mm-hmm. next level. But did that, and that was like a really stressful time at the end, because it was crunch time, of course. We had to get a lot of stuff done, because he was actually working on two films at that time at the same time, which was Mandy and Mary Magdalene. He was working alongside both of them. So there was a lot of music being written on a daily basis. It's, I remember particularly for Mary Magdalene, there was, I think it's actually the introductory cue where there's like this really beautiful piano arpeggio, piano melody that I think he must have listened to for a whole week straight every single day and tweaked the settings when he was composing it. It was really, he was so detailed about his sound, and about, he just wanted to get it so perfect that he literally worked on the same cue for like 7 days. I remember just sitting there and thinking, wow, I've heard this so many times already today. And then the next day, and then the next day, and then the next day. And I was like, this is such a killer cue. And then after a while, it was like stuck in my head already. It was so good.
Yeah.
That was really, and then, you know, that was so much stuff happening, cool artists coming in. That was, for example, Dustin O'Halloran, who's another amazing composer who's located in LA as well. He had basically a second rig, a second studio in that studio as well. So he kind of travels back and forth between, I think, LA and Berlin, and I think Iceland now. He was there too. And it was like one of those moments where yet another day, some idol was walking in. They're like, oh yeah, Dustin O'Halloran also has a studio here. What's going on here? This is amazing.
Yeah,
it's really phenomenal. And everybody is so awesome, so nice, so creative and welcoming. We pretty much went for dinner every night, and everybody was having a great time. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. I remember when I was first turned on to Johan, was back when I was in school. I went to school for music production. I graduated in 2016. I went to Full Sail University. And my neighbor, who turned out to be one of my best friends, was actually on the show. He was in the film program, and he's an incredible cinematographer. I mean, awesome. Astounding. He's worked for Google. He's had stuff of his played in Times Square. He had a very successful photography, wedding photography business at like 16. He was doing very well. He's done very well. He's incredibly talented. And he turned me on. He always had this very eclectic taste. He was always sending me new music and like very kind of niche electronic music and stuff that would underlie underneath films. And he turned me on to when Sicario came out.
Oh yeah.
And he showed me a song and he's like, you got to listen to this. I'm thinking of us putting a song like this into this little short that I'm doing for school. What do you think of it? And it was The Beast.
Such a good feel.
I'm like, I have that song in my, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. I'm like, this song is incredible. And every time it comes on, I have to give it the respect and let it play all the way through.
Yeah.
I can't pause it. I can't skip it. It's so simple, but it is so moving. And unfortunately, I've never seen the movie. My friend was a big cinema person, but I just never had the time to do movies. Yeah. And there's too many other things that I want to do than watch movies.
Of course.
But I love the soundtracks. And that is one of the best.
And that's really an awesome example too, especially that track that you just mentioned, like The Beast. That's definitely one of, in my opinion, Johan's strongest film scores ever, because it's what I admire about his music so much is that you can actually you can listen to a whole soundtrack album as an album. You can actually listen to it from start to finish without feeling bored, without feeling like it's just a filler cue for some scene that kind of was dragging and that just put a little bit of underscore under. It was always through composed. Every aspect of every single track is through composed. It really feels like just one
piece. It stands on its own.
It does. And the cool thing, and I think this is when you can really tell if you have a good soundtrack or not, is if you can imagine the story whilst listening to the music. You don't even need to look at it. You don't need to see the film. You can actually listen to the music and it takes you through the different parts of the story. And I feel like another person who's really good at that, I think, is Thomas Newman, for example, with all of his work. Those people, they achieve with their music that you can listen to it and you know exactly what's going on with the character. You know exactly where they are, when they are, where they're going, or if they're going somewhere. That's really so phenomenal, which I admire about especially Johan's music, because it stands on its own, like you said. It's really a piece of art. Every track is, and then once you have an album, it's this grand, beautiful goodness, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I like that The Beast in particular is really simplistic. Like there's not a lot of substance to it.
It's true.
But he knows how to draw. It's that minor third sliding down and that bass is all it is. And that's like enough to like trigger you. And then he's got the crunchy drums.
Yeah.
Like that build slowly. It's enough to like, I mean, if I heard that song playing in the middle of the night, I would freak. I'd be like, there is something is going to happen right now. Like, I don't know what, but I'm freaked.
100%. It's so intense. It's so good. There's so much I could be talking about. I love about that track. Everything about it, from the drums that you were talking about, like that way he treated them with that kind of slightly distorted sound. It's just so evil. That low glissando is so evil, and it wasn't used like that either. It was one of the first tracks that really utilized those glissandos or glissandi as much as he did. I feel like he kind of reintroduced it or reintroduced it to film and TV.
I've heard quite a few scores use it now.
Yeah, exactly, because it works.
It's
a very good tool, and I feel like a lot of Icelandic composers, especially Hildur, Johan, and all those people, Ólafur Arnalds, and all those composers, they seem to use kind of bendy synth and bendy strings and bendy instruments lines a lot. They use that tool a lot. And it's definitely noticeable with a lot of the music that they write. It's a tool. They have gestures of melodies that are kind of these bends, rather than having a full-blown melody that you can hum afterwards. But they have gestural structures, I think, and gestural ideas, which are still so memorable when you listen to them, and they're extremely impactful because you just don't know where it's going to go. Is it going to bend here? Is it going to go here? And how slow and how fast is it going to bend? it's like there's so much depth to bending notes. I know it sounds kind of simple, but yeah, it really is true. It's kind of so much more than just, it basically hits all the notes in between the notes you can
play on a keyboard. Even notes that you can't play on a keyboard, like the notes between a half step.
Exactly.
You are heard, and like you can't replicate that by playing it on the piano.
Exactly. It's like that does something. And I think psychologically that must do something. And I think that's one reason why those composers are so incredibly successful and why their music is so popular now, because it really, it opened up this whole new world of film music and TV music that wasn't heard like that before. It was just, I mean, summing up as a stereotype, but it's kind of more or less emotional piano and strings. And then you have like a piano arpeggio and a sweet little melody on top, basically. And then that's cool too, but it's cool in its own time, I think. But I think what they managed to do is please the producers and the directors of those movies and actually still make it their own and like really craft a soundtrack that's so individual and so unique to the project that you could never imagine that music under anything else. Especially with tracks like The Beast, for example. Like as a compositional tool, the minor third thing works, but you could never take that track as it is and slap it under another film and it works as well. I don't think so. It's so tailored to Sicario and to that movie. It's a body of work that's just for Sicario. It's for this film.
It's just like Hans Zimmer's Inception.
Exactly.
Same thing. Those tracks. Time is one of my favorite tracks. I literally get tears when I hear that. I could be in the happiest place in the world and that song comes on and I will literally cry tears of like, this is so beautiful.
Exactly. And it's tailored to the scene.
So perfectly. Simple too. It's four chords.
Yeah.
Five chords, the whole song. And it just builds and it builds and it builds. I'm like, how do you take something so simple and just continually build it and build it? And Hans Zimmer, my dream is to compose music for a film. I've always had this dream. I'm not a composer, but if there's a will, there's a way. I know music well enough to get in and I'm just going to like start putting chords together. I don't know if this is even feasible, but it sounds cool. I'm going to do it.
Exactly.
Because there's no rules to music.
Exactly.
Every big musician to ever play music, Prince, Jimi Hendrix, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles have all broken rules in music.
That's right.
They're meant to be broken. And that's where you get the coolest stuff and the most flexibility. It's, hey, whatever sounds cool, run with it. But Hans Zimmer is one of my biggest inspirations in that because he's proof of being able to take a song like Time, so simple, very simple, starts very simple and just builds and builds and builds and turns it into one, in my opinion, one of the most iconic, memorable tracks of all time.
Oh, sure. It's definitely one of the most iconic soundtracks of all time.
Yeah.
100%.
100%. Everything Hans, and thankfully I was able to see Hans Zimmer live
in
Florida, and my jaw was on the floor. They had, did he do Interstellar too?
Yeah.
I think he did. Yes, he did. I get the two, Inception and Interstellar, mixed up. But they had like the graphics team from Interstellar, the team that put the graphics together for that whole movie, and they had it on a big ass screen.
Wow.
And you would watch the graphics that they put together for that show. And then Hans Zimmer and a bunch of students from UCF were playing live to this thing. And I was like, what the hell? And I'm like, that is Hans Zimmer, one of the most iconic film composers of all time.
Yeah.
And that's that's freaking Hans Zimmer.
Yeah. And he's standing there and it's like, I'm in the movie, but in person with like hundreds of thousands of other people. This is amazing.
When I tell you, I was blown away. I will see him again at least 10 more times.
Oh yeah.
At least. I've watched a lot of his like master courses that he gives, like speeches that he gives on YouTube and some of the things he's talking about on how he does it. And his studio is just gorgeous.
It's
amazing. I actually have this picture here. It's not of Hans Zimmer. It's 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Oh,
Bear McCreary.
Nice.
And he's one of my favorites too. I actually got to meet him. It's autographed.
That's awesome.
By him. He was here. He was in Burbank somewhere and at some coffee shop or something. So I went to meet him before the pandemic, of course. But got to meet him, shake his hand. And, you know, I was hoping for a Godzilla one because I love Godzilla.
Yep.
But I got this one and shook his hand, thanked him. He, you know, took a picture with him.
Yeah. Actually, one of my friends worked for Pyramid Career for,
oh, wow.
For a short while last summer, actually. It was he worked with him as a part of an internship, basically. And you got to do a lot of sample library editing and that kind of stuff, just making instruments for his team. I think he enjoyed it very much.
He was a really humble guy. Like, I just walked up to him. He just looked like some old rocker.
Yeah.
Just ready to, like, but I mean, again, a very talented, incredible film composer of this generation.
Yeah, because he also risks things. And it's, I feel like all the greats, they have one thing in common. They just take risks. They just try things, and they try things until it's right. And then they take that as the basis of the sound of the soundtrack. Like, it's too easy to just go to your go-to instruments quickly and then just kind of write something real quick. That's too easy. But those people actually think for a long time.
I think Hans Zimmer, there was a video on YouTube that I saw. I think it was Hans Zimmer where he was talking about how he created a sound for, I think he did the original Batman movie. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
The Dark Knight, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And he was telling how when he created the Joker sound, very simple. He took a guitar and a razor blade.
Yep.
And that's all he used was that. And that was when the Joker came on. But it's like, again,
the first scene, right?
Simplicity.
Yep.
That's all it is. Like, who would have thought that something that simple, a razor blade to a guitar string, that's all it is.
Exactly. But then, like, you have to have that time. You have to have that mentality to even think of those things. You have to really just sit there and think, you know what, how can I make this totally unique for the project? How does this relate to the character that I'm trying to portray? And how am I, like, how does this describe the world that I'm trying to describe? And how does this inform the picture? How does the color work with that music? Is the color grade, I mean, that's another huge aspect, I think, which is often neglected. It's just how the importance of color in film. It's so important. And I'm always a fan when there's loads of color, when there's loads of different color in film, and it's like just beautiful and colorful rather than just kind of not so saturated and kind of trying to be cinematic. But I feel like cinematic is actually vibrant colors. It's vibrant colors and the music that matches that. But Hans, yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely one of my idols as well. He's incredible.
Yeah.
What he's done. Every soundtrack sounds like him. Every soundtrack, he comes up with something new that's so simple but so good at the same time.
Yeah, it's that German blood, man.
I don't know what it's that maybe German that's what blood. It is. Maybe, maybe it's calculating what might work.
He's. I think he's really set a standard for what film composition is in this century.
Oh, for sure.
And I think even some of the most renowned composers in the realm really look at Hans and be like, what the hell did he do here? Yeah. I want some, they can always point, there's a Hans Zimmer track for, I want it to sound like that.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I want this instrument. I want something similar to what he did here. How the hell he did it, I have no idea, but I want it to sound like that.
Exactly.
But
it's being temped all the time. It's pretty awesome.
I could talk about Hans Zimmer all the time because he's one of my favorites, and just emotionally he can bring out emotion in me that I didn't even know music could tap into. And it's a beautiful thing when music can pull your emotions that much. It's like, that's powerful. Like, that song will forever live with me because of what it does to my emotions.
Exactly. And the interesting thing about the music and his music too is that whenever you listen to that music and it really is so emotionally striking, whenever 10 years later, 5 years later, you hear that song, it immediately takes you back to that moment you heard it for the first time. Like instant memory of your surroundings, of the people you were surrounded by nature, by, you know, everything, every aspect of that first time you heard that striking soundtrack, you will always remember for the rest of your life. I think I saw a thing where they did some research about Alzheimer's and actually figured out that a lot of people remember very specific moments in their life through music, even though they've forgotten pretty much their children's names and the craziest stuff.
Simple
they don't
things.
Know how to walk, but through kind of exposing them to music that they were listening to at the time, they go back, they remember, they know, they have that instant connection that goes back to that day. And I think that just shows how powerful music actually is and how sometimes underrated it is too, when people just think, well, let's slap it under some, you know, a video, but it's actually much more than that. It has to match what's going on screen. It has to tell a story.
I've seen films, short films, especially when I was a student at Full Sail, I would have a lot of people like showing me their films, and I just saw a lot of films and projects that students had done. And I'm just thinking like, this cinematography is really good. The storyline is really good. It's there. It's obviously like your students are still learning. There's still a lot of stuff that could be worked on. But the music, if you just had the right music, you could really bypass, like maybe there's an actor that's not doing really well and it's kind of pulling you out. But if you just had the music, that would make up for it and you could really pull me in.
Exactly. And it can really fix things too. Like you said, if there's just one element of the film that's not quite right, even if it's just for one scene, you can fix that with the music. It can just pull it back. You can pull it back on track and people won't notice it because they would have focused on something else. Subconsciously, they don't know because they just watched the movie. They're just the audience. They don't have to think, why is this working?
Yeah.
They just want to know.
A lot of people don't think of those things. Like as creative people, you and I will instantly like, that music, it don't fit right.
And then just like analyzing it and just thinking, why does it not work? I feel like that's always fascinating when you see like the occasional film where I think, I'm not sure if this works actually. I feel like this is not doing it a favor. Or do we even need music at all? I feel like this would be almost stronger if there wasn't music. That those moments happen too. Where silence can be so much more effective. But just making that choice as a composer, I feel like it's tricky to not want to compose.
It's like, oh, I always want to be the forefront of this, like let me put music here or there, and sometimes it's like, well, wait a minute, actually I think this scene or this moment doesn't need music here.
Doesn't need music, exactly. And then the acting is so good and it's really getting us through, do we need to enhance this? Or is it even better when they just, you know, have their breakdown or something, or they have their emotional love scene or something? Do we need something there? Maybe it's enough. Maybe the costume and all that. Because at the end of the day, it's just one small aspect of this whole body of work, which is the film. It's, I mean, costume, like all those different departments. It's phenomenal. It's a miracle, really, that movies get done at all, because there's so many people involved, so many moving parts. And then at the end, it always comes down and it most of the time works out. And that's so amazing. And music is just a really small process, really small part of that, but it's important.
It's some of the most, some of the best movies that I've seen, or the horror movies that I've seen, my favorite genre of music, I love the genre of horror genre of movies, but those are my favorite scores, are the horror ones. And I think when I compose for a movie, it's going to be a horror because I love getting just dirty, gritty, scary. Yeah. I want to scare the hell out of you with the music. And it's just like, I always factor to minor chords. Like those are kind of my forte. I prefer those.
Oh,
they just bring more emotion, I think.
Exactly.
And you can play a little bit more with them.
Exactly. And with horror also, a lot of horror scores, they actually are very experimental. They actually leave a lot of room for the composer to express themselves. And I think that's really interesting. Because I feel like a lot of mainstream movies don't really do that that much. It's kind of, they're kind of more or less playing it safe in a way. But with the horror genre, there's so much you can do. It's like we're trying to freak people out. And we're trying to freak out people out in a new way. Not just always with a jump scare. That's much more nuanced than that. But like thrillery stuff that's, like this underbed of something, you don't know what's quite going on. Is somebody gonna die? What's gonna happen? Like what?
Or am I gonna die?
Exactly. Is this thing gonna jump out of the screen or something? I don't know. You never know. They might have invented a new genre of film. Who knows?
And some of the most craziest and scariest movies that I've seen, going back just a little bit, have been ones where the movie goes to silence.
Yeah.
And there's somebody walking, or you see something in the background, like a pair of eyes, or you just hear like room noise.
Yeah.
But there's no music. And then all of a sudden something, bang, it happens. And I'm like, because it's like you got music and then all of a sudden you're stopped. You're like on the edge of a cliff and you're like, where are we? What's exactly going on? And you're kind of distracted by that. And then something else comes from left field and
yeah,
scares the hell really, out of you.
It can really trick you. And that's another wonderful thing about music, I think, in general, with any type of music, really, even, you know, when you have a drop of something or just basically breaking someone's expectation of something. If you have a certain pattern that you set up with your first four bars, let's say, you have a 4-4 pattern or something, and you have some cool rhythm, you kind of, after one or two bars, you get used to it and you kind of vibe it out. You're like, oh yeah, this is awesome. I'm used to this now. I can memorize what the thing is that I'm listening to. And, but then if you repeat that too often, you're going to get bored. The audience is going to get bored. So you have to change something about it. So one of the most effective things is to take the sound away. And then all of a sudden people are like, oh my God, where did the sound go? And then when it comes back in, it's even more striking because it's like, oh, it's back, but it's mm-hmm. back in a different way or something. It's like, mm-hmm. it's really, it's a good tool for sure to break up that repetitiveness of music and people getting mm-hmm. used to stuff too quickly.
And I like what you said about the horror films is there's a lot of room for experimentation. There's a lot of room for razor blades on guitar strings. Whereas yeah. like you got a Disney film score, you're probably not going to hear that because exactly. Disney film scores sound the same. They're very melodic. They're very happy. They yeah. have all the same instruments. They're always, it's like a full ensemble all the time. And it's like almost too much going on with the cartoons and them singing and they're dancing and they're throwing stuff. And you've got the whole ensemble. It's like, exactly. I'm overwhelmed here. There's too much going on.
It's definitely overload. It's
I'm overstimulated here. Like my brain is going crazy. I'm seeing too many colors. I'm hearing too many chords and notes and it's too much.
That's true.
I mean, the Disney music is an art form in its own. It's yeah. very complex and it gets quite difficult.
Oh yeah.
But it's sometimes it's like, it's too much. I need to just like, whoa.
It's too much all the time. I totally get that. But
calm it yeah. down. Just let's bring it back just a little bit.
Actually, let's just have the animation. Let's just let the characters yeah. talk. Come on.
Yeah. And it's like, I feel like Disney movies, they have, like you said, they have music through the whole thing. It's like, sometimes I feel like we've heard music for the last hour. Can we just like pause for a minute and let's just hear Elsa talk or, you know, what does Elsa have to say or Bambi or whatever? And it's like,
yeah.
we can bring the music on when the next song comes on.
But exactly. Like, let's just fade it out for a bit.
Fade it out. I need a break here for sure. But going back a little bit too, you had your, when you were talking about like the importance of how music can bring back certain memories.
Yeah.
There's a TikTok that keeps coming up. There's a lady that works at a nursing home. And I think there's a lot of people there that work there, an elderly home, and a lot of people there have like dementia or yep. late terms of Alzheimer's or mental illness.
Yep.
And there's a lady there who's like 85, 90 years old, and she doesn't know the lady's name. She doesn't know her kid's name. She's virtually forgot how to do a lot of stuff. But yep. when you say, hey, can you play Chopin's song? She starts rattling it out.
Wow. That's incredible.
And she's just playing this piano and her hands are just flying. And I'm like, amazing.
That's incredible.
A beautiful thing.
It really is. And I mean, it's such a fascinating world. That's why I want to explore every aspect of music because we haven't discovered the reasons why we can remember all this stuff. There's no scientific reason yet that we can trace back of why it is so fundamentally important and why music has been such an important part of like human history. I mean, mm-hmm. in the early days also, I mean, music has always been around. It's been a bringing people together thing. It's, you know, community building. That's really what it is. And like distraction in many ways too. It's, you know, being there for the community, collaborating with the community and coming up with something new, new ideas, new vibes.
It's part of people's moment. It's part of cultures,
yeah,
like entire cultures. Like you look at like African tribes and Native American tribes,
yeah, Yeah.
It's just like music is a huge part of their culture with the different anthems and the rituals that they're doing and different things. It's like they come together and they have song and they sing songs and they dance. It's like it just brings everybody together.
It does. And it's like it's like cooking together. I think it's a very similar thing. Just cooking for your family, for example, or playing music with your family. I think those are very bonding experiences because you kind of provide for each other. But with music, you provide in a different sense. You kind of provide almost on a subconscious sense because you just kind of, you just, especially with tribes and, I mean, with music in general, mm-hmm. you grow up with it very early on and you kind of are exposed to it. And certain cultures more so than others. Sure. But if you grow up with that, and it's like that's just ingrained in your identity. It really is. Mm-hmm. And it's such a bonding experience. And you can just look at someone whilst you're playing music or you're listening to music, and you can totally understand what they're thinking at that very moment. I've had that experience so many times, especially when I was living in the UK, when I was living with three of my composer friends. We had a really cool music room where we had a bunch of vinyls, and we just listened to, we had instruments in there, harpsichord even. It was a cool place. And we just had a big music room and just listened to music quite regularly on vinyl. It was just really fun. But I remember specific moments where we were sitting in our armchairs, like a glass of wine in our hand, looking at each other and knowing just exactly what the other person was thinking. You just look at that and you just see, sorry, there's a plane going past. you look at the other person and you get to a certain section in the piece, and you just see something changes in their facial expression, and you know exactly what that is. And I don't know in any other aspect of life, I don't think, where you can look at someone and know so exactly what they're thinking. And then you ask them, you're like, oh yeah, this is an incredible moment, right? And you ask them what they were thinking, and it's exactly what you expected. It's mm-hmm. deeply moved. You can see the goosebumps almost.
yeah, for sure. For me, there's just certain songs that I think of, or when I hear them now, like I have an Apple Music, so I can literally pull up all the stuff that I had CDs for back in, you know, when I was 5, 6, 7 years old. My dad, who's also on the show, funny enough, he collects vinyl, and he's been collecting vinyl for close to 40 years, and he's got a massive collection. So I grew up with every kind of genre awesome. Under the sun.
Yeah.
And, there's just certain songs that I hear where it takes me back to, oh, I remember I was on a bike ride with my friend, or this song, I remember I was at a school dance, and I remember my friend and I were doing this one thing and we laughed so hard because I slipped and fell, or she slipped and fell, or I remember this song here was because, you know, a car ride with my best friend going to a movie. Like those very specific songs take me back to specific moments. And I think it's addicting, and it's a high in some way. And we get addicted to that, like peace and like better times.
Yeah. That hope.
And I think hope of like, life was so simple back then, or I was having such a great time. And you remember those moments for a reason.
Exactly. And they are like therapy as well, because if you listen to a piece 5 years ago and it was at a time where everything was fine, where you said, you know, oh, everything was good back then, that's the memory that's saved in the brain. That is exactly what the brain recalls when you listen to it again.
It's amazing how that works.
I don't know how it works exactly. I wish it did, because I feel like that would be the most mind-blowing, literally, pun intended, sorry, mind-blowing experience. But the fact that you can listen to a piece, remember it exactly how it was, and then you're like, I feel the same way, exactly the same way as I did then. It's therapy. It really is therapy.
Yeah, it is. And there's people who take music part of their low points in their life.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, like my partner, he opens up his iPod and he's got all these songs that he's got. And he's like, damn, when I look back and I listen to this music, all these bad memories come to mind. But this music got him through that.
Exactly.
And now he looks back on that and he's like, wow, look where I am now. Look how far I've come. Look what I've overcome in my life. And it's like, it's motivating. It's inspiring. And I see a friend of mine I work with. he does music and his music is focused around mental health. And he gets messages all the time that are sometimes very dark. People are at literally their lowest point. Some are very graphic images. And there, a lot of them are like, you got me through the darkest part of my life. That's and like incredible. On a podcast where that I'll never forget that he was, we were recording where he was, he got a message from a fan that said, my mom killed herself last night. I'm going to kill myself today.
Oh man.
And he, I mean, what do you do in that moment? But his music keeps these people going.
Exactly.
And it's like, I mean, I didn't even know what, like, how do you handle that? Like you, this person clearly needs professional help, but it's like this music gets them through these dark times. And then they can turn back and look at like, man, I was really sick, but look how far I've come. And now I can look back in and feel a sense of massive accomplishment.
Totally. I mean, that's really incredible. That shows again how powerful it is. And it's like an extension of yourself. When you don't know how to help someone in person or with any other tools you have, you know, than the usual advice and kind of giving them a pat on the shoulder and saying, everything is going to be fine. I'm there for you. Sometimes it's really just about a gesture of here's music.
I hear emotional.
Exactly. Yeah. Here's, we don't have to exchange any words. This is just speaking for itself. I get it. Been there. I'm trying to help you. And this has gotten me through. This is helping you too. And it really, that really, really helps. That's even better having it speak that way, because it's like the deeply emotional, deeply personal level of saying, telling someone, I'm there for you. I think.
And I think, you know, you look at, especially now when everybody is, you know, in a sense of uncertainty with the pandemic, and a lot of people have lost family members or friends from the virus, and and it's really stained the country and really brought forth a lot of the issues that this country is like deeply rooted with. But on top of that, it's like this is such a time where sometimes it's best to just listen and not always have that knee-jerk reaction. And a lot of times, you know, we don't know where people are at. Like today I went to the grocery store, I picked up a couple things, and the cashier was somewhat rude. I could tell that he didn't seem too friendly. I didn't know what was up, but I just thought, okay, he's not an asshole. He could be a really nice guy. He's just having one of those days. And we're in a difficult time, and I'm sure dealing with all these people all the time when you have to wear the mask all the time and you're being yelled at and pressured, and all, it gets to be too much. So it's just like, be nice to one another. I hear you. I'm here for you.
Exactly.
It's going to get better, I promise. And, you know, here's my favorite songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Or here's a soundtrack, like a Hans Zimmer track. You can never go wrong with any soundtrack from Hans Zimmer.
No.
And just listen to this and just let your emotions flow. Experience them. Cry if you have to. Laugh if you have to. Be sad. But just experience them.
It's just like a mini holiday. Them.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off. It's like a mini vacation. It's with, especially when you listen to a good album, you don't want it to end. You just keep listening to it. You start with the first track. You're like, oh, that's exactly what I needed. This is so good. This is taking me places.
It's funny how your mind, when you put on an album or you listen to a song, that takes you back to times where you were having the time of your life, and you can just turn off your mind from the present and go back for 20 minutes and just relive that. And that brings you peace. That's amazing. 'Cause maybe that's the comfort you needed to get through the rest of the week or whatever time you're going through.
Exactly. Some people meditate, some people do yoga, do other sports, go for a run. I mean, there's so many different things one can do to unwind after a busy day. But I feel like one of the most efficient ways still is just listening to an album or listening to a song, even if you don't have enough time, listening to a favorite song. Just sit back, just sit down, close your eyes, listen to the thing, and it'll do something. Even if you don't think about the past, it doesn't have to be reflective. It could be about the future. It could be What do I want to achieve in the next year? What do I want to do in the next month? What do I want to do for the rest of the day? What do I want to have achieved in the next 2 hours? I mean, it really can be a very positive, motivating thing too, mm-hmm. just to look forward to the future and mm-hmm. knowing what you want to achieve and the milestones you want to achieve day by day. And I feel like mm-hmm. setting milestones also is an important thing anyway, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mental health and taking care of yourself and like finding those middle grounds of where you can comfort yourself and find peace in the craziness of a day is a whole conversation in and of itself.
Oh yeah.
And it's something I've really focused on the last 6 months, and it's been very helpful for me personally. And I encourage a lot of people to take those days where you can just completely unwind, go for a drive in the car, put on your favorite album and just get away and just yeah. get off the computer, get yeah. off your phone, turn the TV off. The news isn't helping you.
No,
for sure. It's not. And just get away. Thankfully out in California here, we're lucky to be blessed with so many amazing getaways within 3 hours, going to the beach, oh, yeah. the Pacific Coastal Highway, you know, going up into the mountains, going skiing, going to the beach, and you could do it all in one day if you wanted yeah. to. You could go swimming or surfing and then go skiing at night. It's pretty exactly. crazy to do. And you only have to drive, what, 4 or 5 hours? It's pretty crazy to me. But yeah, we're very lucky out in California here to see just some of the beautiful mountains and to be able to have those getaways.
Oh, for sure.
Easily.
It really is a phenomenal place. There's a lot of really amazing places in the States that I've was lucky to explore, like Arizona, Utah, and you know, Colorado, so many states that are so beautiful and there's so much you can do. But really, living in California is the first experience where I've actually thought, I wonder what the weather is going to be like. And then the next day, I wonder what the weather is going to be like. And then you always realize, oh, actually, it's just sunny. It's kind of nice. Except
it's
right
like
now.
75. Yeah, it's cold and it's been yeah. raining. Has it been yeah. raining there for you?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
all day.
It's been, yeah, all day today. And it was raining, yes, almost all week through the night.
Yeah. And strong rain too. So yeah. it's unusual. Wind. So this week is not so good for like hanging out at the beach. I was at the beach no. on the weekend, but that's far gone.
Yeah, it's a little cold. Yeah, I slept with the windows open a couple times and that was a mistake. It was like, it's like Sunday and we're like, okay, yeah, that was too cold. Because I like to sleep when it's really cold. Otherwise, yeah. I can't sleep.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like, I had two blankets on and I was still cold. And I'm like, not doing this anymore. It's California, but it's cold.
Exactly. Like at a certain point, there's a threshold where you just know, yep, okay, I need that blanket now.
Yeah, I need the blanket. I need to close the windows and turn the heat on. I'm just going to like, not going to suffer through it anymore.
Exactly. And then you have to get rid of the spider webs by the heater.
Yeah, you turn the, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Great. Well, this has been such a great conversation. I really needed this after kind of a long day, long week.
Absolutely.
It was great to talk music. I mean, I can talk music all day long, and especially film music and composing. Like it's a realm that I'm not really familiar with, but it's a world that is an art form in and of itself. Like it's a composer is much different than a singer-songwriter or just an artist.
Yeah.
Like I have respect for many, many singer-songwriters and artists, but composers is like an upper echelon, and just the talent that they have to be able to somewhat play every instrument in an orchestra is mind blowing to me. So anytime I get a chance to chat with somebody who has that expertise or even learn from them is an honor. So I thank you for your time. And, it was so great to connect.
Thank you for having me.
Whenever your things go back to normal, we'll have to meet up and go for lunch or
absolutely
coffee or something. Whenever it's safe to do so. That might be sooner than later. We're getting good news now.
Everybody's crossed.
I'm getting my vaccination, my first one on Saturday.
Oh, awesome.
And my partner
Congrats.
Got his vaccination yesterday.
Amazing.
So things are looking up. So hopefully we can all get vaccinated. And then we can start going back to, you know, seeing people in person.
Exactly. Just socializing. Like
it's socializing.
Out.
We
yeah,
need that.
Things. Yeah.
Seeing live music.
Oh my God. I am so excited for that day where
yeah.
you can meet up with friends, hang out and be like, you know, have a barbecue. Just have simple things like that.
Or going to a music festival at Coachella. Yeah. Like I moved out here. I'm like, damn, I want to go to Coachella. I would have dropped exorbitant amounts of money on things I'll regret later when I won't be able to pay my rent this month and I have to pull from my savings account. But it's an experience. And like,
but it's worth it.
That first festival when we can all go back, I can't even imagine how insane that's going to be for like a Coachella or an Ultra Music Festival.
It will be mind-altering. It will be absolutely mind-blowing. It'll be the most incredible experience. It'll be spiritual. It'll be all the good things you can imagine.
It'll bring everybody a sense of hope back. Like we're getting our grounding back and we're like, we have something to look forward to now. We're like, right now we don't.
It's like exactly
just another day tomorrow. Like, gonna make it through tomorrow and we gotta make it through Saturday.
Exactly.
And it's like, I have a festival to go through.
Oh my God. Exactly. I have another day of this, of craziness. I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
This is gonna be amazing. Exactly. And tomorrow's gonna be Hans Zimmer. And Tina Guo is going to be playing the cello on stage. She's super awesome.
Yep, exactly.
She's going to shred on the cello and play electric cello and like play rock and roll. It's going to be amazing.
Yes. And you can go with like four of your friends and you can go for dinner before at one of your favorite restaurants. And then you can go have amazing drinks and spend $15 on a drink that's basically ice with a little bit of alcohol.
But it's worth it because it's
worth a festival. It because you're paying. It's a festival and you're paying for the experience.
That's right.
Not the product.
Exactly.
You're paying for the experience. And that's why they get away with such crazy numbers.
Well, but, exactly.
Yeah. This was such a great conversation. I had such a great time.
Absolutely. Me too. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Great meeting you. We'll definitely stay in touch. And then when things kind of hopefully... when it's safe to do so, we can meet up and go for lunch or something and continue the conversation there. And I wish you nothing but luck and success.
Thank you very much. You too.
And safety and stay warm.
We'll try. I hope this this cold weather disappears soon. So
don't be like me and be afraid to turn the heater on. It's okay to turn the heater on.
I was there in the beginning, but I changed my mind. I got to say, I went through the same thing. So.
Yeah. It's hard to do. It's hard to do, but...
it's California and it gets cold here occasionally.
It's just hard to admit that, yes, I live in Southern California and I have to have the heater on because most people think like, oh, what do you need the heat for? It's like sunny and 80 every day of the year. Like, what do you need the heat on for?
People don't believe it. Yeah, exactly. It
gets cold.
Yeah, it is cold. It's too cold to sleep at night. That's for sure.
It does. But cool. Thank you so much, Thomas.
Thank you.
It was great meeting you. And you take care.
You too. Bye.